Chapter 8. The List.
Dan, said Lucy, shaking him hard. Dan, do you hear that?
He jerked and sat up, disoriented.
It was Dawn.
It's the signal, she cried. We have to go.
The signal? Are you sure?
He said groggily.
Yes,
insisted Lucy, already out of bed.
Let's go.
They grabbed their backpacks and rushed to their bikes in the lockup downstairs. Both of them had memorized the route to their muster point at Ashurst High School from Dan's offline map of the city. It was 8 hilly miles away, a grueling distance to cycle in a hazmat suit with roughly 100 pounds strapped to your back.
Wait, said Dan as they climbed onto the bikes. We can take these off now, right? That's what Dad's letter said, that the signal would only sound once the virus had died out.
You really want to risk it? At this stage?
Protested Lucy. He considered for a moment, staring at the bike with trepidation.
You're right. It's not worth it. Let's go.
Lucy nodded and pushed off, with Dan following, and the two began their journey against the clock. Marco tooted the garbage truck horn from the opposite lane, waving cheerily as he passed by, another AC/DC classic blaring out. The man seemed completely unconcerned that his oddly dressed co-workers were cycling directly away from their pickup point. They passed 2 separate military trucks along the way, neither of which stopped or questioned them. As they got closer to the school, the route became dotted with individuals converging on the same direction by foot, all with backpacks or suitcases, some in pairs, some alone, a few with children. As Lucy approached the school driveway, the level of fortification became apparent. Razor wire extended outward on either side of the gates, while armed sentries barred the way through. A handful of abandoned cars lined the driveway leading up to the barrier. Dozens of bicycles lay strewn across the grassy verges on either side of the sidewalk.
Watch out,
said Lucy, as Dan's foot hovered above a cluster of dripping toadstools. He wobbled forward and dumped his bike in some clear grass. Lucy followed suit, and they approached the unmasked sentries by foot.
Name and papers,
snapped the first guard, his gritted teeth plainly visible. Dan reached into his pocket and retrieved the letter from his father, along with their passports.
Daniel Jeffries,
stated Dan, handing the bundle over to the guard, who took the items but didn't look at them, instead consulting a printed list in his hand, flicking through its many pages and scanning each row as he went, lightly dragging a pen down the side in a tracking motion as he trawled the names.
You're not on the list,
said the guard firmly after an uncomfortably long search, flipping back to page 1 and looking at them with deep suspicion. Behind him, the other sentries pricked up, raising their guns slightly.
We are, sir. Please, check the letter,
pressed Dan, striking a respectful tone.
We might be under my father's name. Oh, you're on the freeloader list,
spat the soldier.
Well, bully for you, son.
Goldberg,
he shouted, summoning a colleague over his shoulder.
Bring me the freeloader list.
This time he literally spat on the ground. The guard consulted Dan's letter, then scanned the new, significantly shorter list.
What do you know?
He said, making no effort to conceal his contempt.
Here you are.
He flipped open their passports, and his cynical eyes switched between the photographs and the hazmat suit-clad individuals before him until eventually he was satisfied.
You used to serve?
Said the guard, glaring at Dan.
Yes, sir,
confirmed Dan.
Got tired of protecting your country, did you?
He crossed their names off and held out their papers, dropping the lot before Dan could reach them.
You'll need these, too,
he said, chucking a couple of wristbands into the pile as Dan scrabbled to pick it all up off the ground.
Have a safe trip, one and all,
hissed the guard, waving them through the gates.
Fucking freeloaders,
chimed one of the other soldiers. A row of cones led them to the sports hall, which was guarded by more unmasked soldiers. Lucy began to feel increasingly uncomfortable in the hazmat suit.
List A or List B?
Inquired the new clerk as they arrived at the school hall. Hesitated Dan.
The guy out front said we were on the freeloader
list B,
interjected the clerk, cutting him off.
This way,
he instructed, opening the door and pointing to a line directly opposite. The setup resembled airport security.
There were checkpoints, and people were removing their belts and shoes and other items, and their luggage and belongings were being passed through scanners. Soldiers patrolled the inner perimeter of the hall, using gymnastic benches as vantage points. Their expressionless, helmet-clad heads protruded about a foot above the crowd. There were dozens of Line A's, but only one Line B. A floating clerk approached Dan and Lucy and handed them each a pen and clipboard with a questionnaire attached.
Fill out this health form and hand it to the officer when you reach the end of the line. Oh, and you can take those off now. The virus is no longer airborne.
Lucy surveyed the room as the clerk departed. A handful of individuals still wore face masks, but the vast majority had their airways exposed.
I guess a few hundred humans will have to be our new canaries, said Lucy, lifting off her visor.
With extreme care, Dan cut away the duct tape from Lucy's gloves using a knife from his bag. She pulled the thick rubber protectives off and took the knife from Dan, delicately reciprocating.
This is gonna get confiscated, she commented.
Once Dan's hands were liberated, Lucy resumed undressing. She pulled off her mask, goggles, and hood, and loosened the chest zipper on the suit. The skin around her face and chest tingled in the fresh air, and she took in several deep, unrestricted lungfuls. She looked at Dan, whose eyes were closed, his head tilted backwards as he basked in the neon-strip lights of the hall. Lucy drank in every aspect of his face. As Line B shuffled forwards, the pair turned their attention to the health forms they'd been handed. The first few questions were standard enough. Allergies, current medication, etc. But the subsequent questions grew obscure.
Do you have these questions too?
She asked Dan, noticing the puzzled expression on his face as he studied the form.
About the bleeding? He replied. Yeah, it's weird.
Lucy surveyed the questions. Are you a hemophiliac? Do you have any open cuts or wounds on your person? Do you suffer from nosebleeds? When was the last time you bled? If you are female, when is your next period due? She postponed her bewilderment and hastily filled out the form as they nudged forwards again. They were next in line.
Thank you, buzzed the seated clerk at the head of their line, snatching the clipboards from their hands. Men to the right, women to the left.
She extended a hand towards the two parallel gazebos ahead. Dan gave Lucy's hand a fleeting squeeze, precious skin-on-skin contact, before their paths diverged. Lucy entered her tent, and the scuttling of plastic on metal signaled the curtain being pulled shut behind her. A haggard female medic stood in the center of the tent, examining a clipboard. The woman's hair was light brown and wiry. The short curls were infused with flecks of white and extended only an inch below her ears. Dark bags hung under each eye, adding color to her otherwise pale, wrinkly white skin. Lucy realized the woman was wearing a protective face mask and began to panic. Desperately, she fumbled for her own face mask while simultaneously trying to wrestle the hood back over her head.
You don't need that, the doctor informed her.
But you're wearing a...
It's for something else. A general precaution,
dismissed the woman.
Nothing you need to worry about. The virus is gone, if that's what you're thinking. It's no longer airborne.
So I don't need...
hesitated Lucy, wondering why this seismic change in the city's fortunes hadn't been broadcast from the rooftops.
No, you don't,
asserted the doctor less patiently. Lucy lowered her visor to the floor where it rocked, a bundle of gloves, mask, and goggles inside it protruding out over the edges. The masked doctor skimmed through Lucy's form, murmuring to herself.
Fine, fine. Take off your clothes, please,
she said, glancing up. Lucy looked around the tent awkwardly. They were the only ones there. She unzipped the hazmat suit and slipped it down to her heels, where it flopped over her rubber boots. She blushed furiously and pulled each boot off with a great deal of imbalance before hastily removing the rest of the suit and her grimy base layer top.
I'll need you to remove your underwear, too, in a minute, but you can keep it on for now,
stated the doctor, placing down the clipboard and putting on a pair of latex gloves. Lucy's cheeks burned. She was acutely aware of her unshaven legs and the smell emanating from her freshly shed plastic skin.
Arms out,
sighed the doctor, stepping behind Lucy with a small light. She arranged Lucy's arms in a T-shape before scrutinizing the tops and undersides. Lucy cringed as the doctor studied her armpit hair.
Fine,
muttered the doctor, abandoning Lucy's arms and studying the rest of her torso. Lucy kept her arms outstretched until she could support them no longer, by which time the doctor was at her ankles. The woman returned to Lucy's head and meticulously examined her scalp, prizing strands of hair apart and probing the skin beneath.
"I need you to take off your bra and underwear now," she said, making another note on her clipboard.
Lucy obliged, slipping off her underwear. She stared straight ahead, willing the examination to be over.
"Yes, yes," mumbled the doctor before facing Lucy once again. "Last bit, sorry. I need you to lie on the bench and open your legs."
Lucy did a cartwheel of embarrassment in her head. She tried to act casual as she lay on her back, staring at the tent ceiling, while the woman shone a flashlight directly into her vagina.
"All right, you can put your underwear on again, but I need you to keep your midriff exposed and lie back down on the bed when you're ready."
Lucy turned her back on the doctor and quickly pulled her underwear back on, before lying down on the bench as instructed. The doctor approached, wearing a pair of protective goggles, and handed Lucy a pair too.
"Put these on for me and look straight up at the ceiling. This will only take a moment."
Lucy put the goggles on as the doctor wheeled over a trolley. The device on top resembled a lamp, but in place of the bulb there was a thin silver rod about the length of a pen.
"Just lean back and relax for me," instructed the doctor. "Count aloud to 10. You'll feel a slight pinch, but then the vaccination won't take long."
Lucy leaned back and opened her mouth.
1, 2, she counted nervously as a warm sensation spread across her abdomen.
By the time she got to 8, the heat was intense and starting to burn painfully.
9,
she said, choking back the tears and gagging with disbelief.
10,
she cried with a sharp gasp, clenching her teeth as the excruciating sensation continued for several more seconds.
"Okay, you're all done,"
stated the doctor, reaching down and passing Lucy her top. Lucy pulled the garment over her head and down to her burning abdomen, cradling the area with her hands.
"The burning will pass within an hour or so,"
commented the doctor, handing Lucy her backpack. The woman slid back the exit curtain to reveal the rear of the sports hall where Dan stood waiting.
"You'll need to finish dressing out there, I'm sorry. We're on a very tight schedule,"
clipped the doctor.
"My suit?" said Lucy, pointing to the crumpled mass. "You don't need it anymore," sighed the woman, "and we can't permit it on the train, I'm afraid."
Lucy shuffled towards the exit, her weighty backpack slung over one shoulder, a hand still nursing her abdomen. The gazebo curtain closed behind her. A soldier stepped forward and affixed a green band to Lucy's wrist.
"Lucy, are you okay?"
said Dan quickly, crossing over to her, also wearing a green wristband. He gently lifted the backpack from her shoulder and set it on the floor, rummaging through the contents and pulling out a pair of jeans. He held each leg open for her to dazedly step into.
"Luce?"
he asked again, guiding her hands to the waist button. Muscle memory kicked in and she absently fastened the jeans while Dan negotiated sneakers onto her feet.
"I think I've just been sterilized,"
she uttered, hearing the words coming out of her mouth as if they were said by a stranger, her eyes falling down on Dan, who looked up from one knee, aghast.
"Hey, you two, hurry up," barked a soldier. "Get your asses onto the transport if you want to make that train."
A commotion broke out a few rows along from them.
"Help! Somebody, please! Please help!"
cried a distraught woman, imploring her neighboring civilians, who continued to back away.
"Ma'am, please,"
said a soldier, trying to contain the situation, but the lady was having none of it.
"Go to hell!"
yelled the woman.
"Scott! Scott!"
she called out, reaching out to a man not far from her who was being separately restrained. A set of troops encircled the woman, some facing her, others facing the rest of the hall to ensure there was no further dissent. A terrified young child clung to the woman's leg, burying his infant face into her thigh.
"Listen to them, honey. It's gonna be okay,"
pleaded the man, presumably her husband, while trying to shrug off the firm grips of the soldiers on either side of him.
"Jonah, Jonah, buddy, it's gonna be all right, okay? Daddy's gonna be fine,"
he insisted, addressing the young boy who continued to hide. Lucy's eyes tracked down to the man's left leg, where his pant leg had been rolled up to the knee, revealing a bloodied bandage around his shin.
"Ma'am, please," interjected a soldier.
I'm going to order my troops to stand down so you can say goodbye, but I need you to remain calm. Do you understand? I am not leaving him here, cried the woman, channeling her distress and anger directly at the officer. Then none of you will be able to travel, replied the officer, patience waning as the evacuation deadline loomed closer. Those are your options. It's you and the child, or none of you. I ain't going on the train, so it makes no difference to me. It's your life, but you gotta decide right now.
Please, let me talk to my wife,
begged the man from outside the circle. The officer begrudgingly signaled his troops to release him.
The man rushed forward to his wife and gripped her desperately in his arms, the two openly weeping. He broke off the embrace and took his wife's face in his hands, staring her straight in the eyes.
I'll find you when this is over, I promise, he insisted.
Scott, she pleaded, but he cut her off.
Take Jonah and do what we all need you to do. I can get by here, but I won't be able to live with myself if you two don't get on that train because of me, he replied.
The wife shook her head, sobbing. She pressed her forehead into her husband's.
Professor, we need to go. I'm sorry,
interrupted the officer.
The man kissed his wife, then knelt down beside his son, turning the terrified boy around to face him. Fresh tear tracks lined the boy's puffy young cheeks as he stared at his father wide-eyed with love and confusion.
Jonah, your mom's a really important person, you know that? And Daddy needs you to look after her while you're both away. Daddy's gotta do some stuff here, but he'll catch up with you as soon as he can. Can you promise me you'll look after Mommy until then?
The little boy nodded, his unchanged expression showing how little of the situation he comprehended. The man gave his boy and his wife one last hug before a soldier led him away and out of sight. The mother and son were swiftly ushered away through the hall's main exit, with two soldiers helping the grieving woman to walk, while a third carried her child in his arms. Ripples of uncertainty spread across the rest of the hall as anxious evacuees tried to fathom the precise reasons for the man's eviction, wondering if they were next.
All right, let's turn it around, shouted the ranking officer, galvanizing his stalled troops and clerks back into action.
As they stepped into the main corridor following the other processed evacuees out into the rear parking lot, the pain in Lucy's abdomen flared up, making her bend over. Dan placed a protective arm around her shoulder, shielding her from the jostling crowd. She glanced around as they moved. Many of the women her age bore similar signs of agony, but the older women seemed unaffected. A row of empty troop carrier trucks stretched out across the lot. Green wristbanded people climbed into the backs, sending up their backpacks first, then clambering in with the help of those already on board.
Lists A, 1 through 9, this way. List B, that way,
announced an officer through a megaphone, repeating the message as people streamed by. Lucy counted about a dozen trucks in all as Dan steered them towards the lone B truck at the far end of the line. Dan threw their backpacks in and helped Lucy up the steps. She swayed at the top, prompting an older woman to leap up and help her into a seat. Lucy looked around at the other occupants of the truck. They ranged in age and ethnicity, but all had the same slightly shifty look, and tended to avoid eye contact. Perhaps the word freeloader was echoing around their heads, too.
Move out,
came the order further up, followed by the sound of engines starting. Their vehicle sprang to life with a rumble and splutter, shaking its occupants, then settling down into a juddering idle. The other trucks could be heard pulling away one after another while the last of Truck B's passengers were loaded. Lucy stared out of the open back as they pulled away, passing the razor wire boundary. Two Humvees with mounted gun turrets tagged on behind them, obscuring her view of the school's shrinking American flag as it rippled defiantly in the breeze. Lucy started to recognize certain buildings as they got closer to the train station. With a lurch, the engine suddenly cranked up several gears, and the truck plunged forward, sending its passengers jostling into one another. One of the Humvees pulled out and overtook them, its navigator pointing to something ahead and shouting as they disappeared from view. Masses of people began to appear in the truck's wake, standing amid uncollected bodies. Some protesters wore masks, others had their faces exposed.
Some had backpacks. Others held baseball bats. Razor wire had been deployed along the sidewalks, keeping the angry crowd at bay as the convoy passed through. Ground troops hastily closed the makeshift Razor gate as the last Humvee passed through. The crowd's shouting was incoherent, but its anger was palpable. There weren't just thousands of them. There were tens of thousands. Truck B came to a halt amid a protective circle of 200 troops who stood between them and the wire. Soldiers bellowed at Lucy and her fellow occupants to get the hell out. She and Dan threw their backpacks out of the truck and leapt after them, Lucy's abdomen burning with the impact of concrete underfoot. As she and Dan scrabbled to refasten their bags, specific chants from the crowd became audible.
"Let us on the fucking train!"
came a cry from nearby, which was met with roars of approval and echoes of cursing directed at the evacuees.
"Hey, what about our goddamn rights? What about our rights?"
came another cry from behind the wire.
"Come on, keep it moving,"
yelled a soldier, giving Lucy a shove towards the station entrance. All along the way, soldiers yelled at them, urging them forward through the open barriers and ticket hall and out towards the train. The platform was rammed with people from the other trucks, all hurrying to find their carriage.
"Truck B, right ahead!"
screamed a soldier, straining to be heard above the crowd as Lucy's pace slowed, unsure where to turn. Dan grabbed her hand, pulling her straight ahead and onto the carriage steps.
"Keep going! Move along inside!"
came more bellowing from the soldiers, furiously directing the passengers further into the carriages as more approached. Theirs was the nearest and last carriage on the train. Lucy and Dan climbed the stairs to the upper deck, where they flung themselves into the closest seats. The two turned and stared out of the window fearfully as the hordes of angry and desperate people surrounding the station began to escalate their protests. Lucy's eye moved to the razor wire directly ahead, where a man was pulling off his shirt. He tore it in two and wrapped it around each hand before taking hold of the barrier and prizing the metal spirals apart, slowly edging forwards in between the wire.
"Get back!"
shouted a nearby soldier, Lucy reading his lips through the thick glass, but the topless man didn't listen. The soldier smashed the butt of his rifle into the man's face, sending him crashing backwards, the wire springing back viciously as the man's grip slackened with the impact. He fell to the ground, blood immediately leaking from the scores of razor cuts across his body. A retaliatory bottle flew out from the midst of the crowd and smashed into the soldier's helmet, sending shards of glass into his cheek. The soldier reeled backward as two colleagues closed in to provide reinforcement. The first warning shots rang out. Lucy's eye darted over to a jeep where a marshal stood atop the hood, the recently fired pistol in his right hand pointing directly at the sky, a megaphone in his left hand.
"This is your final warning," cried the marshal. "There is no more room on the train, but rations are available to you. The virus is over. The city will be restored soon. Disperse immediately or we will use lethal force."
As the marshal lowered his megaphone and turned to climb off the jeep, a fresh gunshot rang out. He pivoted on the spot, off balance as the bullet blasted into his shoulder, sending him crashing to the ground. A whistle sounded and the vehicle's gun turret launched into action. The gunner fired suppression patterns into the crowd, sending the mob sprawling outwards as they trampled and crushed each other in flight, while tear gas grenades exploded underfoot. But as the plumes of gas spread among the crowd, a breach formed in the barrier. The wire to Lucy's right had been cut, and desperate citizens now surged through the rupture. The nearest turret began to spin around to halt the unstoppable tide, but it was too late. The crowd was among them now. The gunner pulled out his revolver and began to pick off advancing individuals, many of whom fell immediately, not being armed at all. The adjacent Humvee reversed suddenly, wiping out two civilians. But before the gunner could engage the oncoming masses, a hail of bullets burst through the tear-gassed smokescreen. An armored police vehicle surged through the perimeter, firing at soldiers and civilians indiscriminately. The wire wrapped itself around the careening police truck. The vehicle strained as the razors bit into its tires and mangled around the axle, bringing it to a halt. But the truck had squashed a large section of fence, which the mob now poured through, immediately overwhelming the only remaining turret gunner. A scrawny male civilian with his hood pulled up leapt onto the now vacant turret, and attempted to retrain it against the military, but was immediately shot down by the ground-level troops. As the soldiers engaged the advancing mob in two-way gunfire, a third breach appeared in the perimeter, and thousands more began to pour through the gap, knocking each other over and trampling the fallen underfoot. A second police riot vehicle raced into the fray, and a dozen self-styled militiamen poured out into the concourse, wielding a mixture of handguns, rifles, and machine guns. Through the stuttering gunfire, shouting, and engine revs came a second whistle, and the train lurched forwards. The mob spilled out onto the platform and began running towards the train.
"Jesus Christ, they're going to board us!"
cried a terrified man a few rows along. The whole carriage lined the windows, staring in terror as hundreds of people poured onto the concourse, all running in their direction. Some quickly began shedding their backpacks and weapons in a bid to run faster. As the 12-carriage double-decker behemoth slugged forwards, the mob began to close in on Lucy and Dan's carriage.
"Help! Please help us! Wait!"
cried a man so earnestly he could be heard through the thick glass of the upper deck. He was almost level with their carriage door now, closely followed by dozens more, all doggedly chasing the accelerating train. His arm extended out towards the carriage railing, a look of profound urgency widening his desperate eyes as his fingers homed in on the rail.
"Wait! No!"
cried the man before a burst of gunfire spurted out from the lower deck. He vanished from sight along with the runners nearest him. More gunshots. The deck below continued to fire. Lucy pressed her face into the glass, trying to see what was happening, but the window frame blocked her view.
"Lucy!"
called Dan a little way behind her. She rushed over and joined him at the rear door, which was the end of the train. Together, they peered out of the circular hatch-like window and watched in horror. Bodies lay strewn across the concrete in race formation, dotted out like a track and field massacre. Behind them was a growing group of people arriving onto the platform, only to realize the train had gone. Lucy stared at the mob members. They were ordinary people, arms hanging limply by their sides, gaunt faces gazing back at her in disbelief as the train pulled clear of the platform. The locomotive continued to gather speed, the sounds of gunfire and chaos giving way to the clatter of the engine as it cleared the besieged station and abandoned what remained of the city.